I tuned in to BFF.fm, and it was pretty obscure. There was a lot of music on there that I didn't know.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.
They didn't play Dave.
You are listening to TV on the Radio here on BFF.fm. That was Los Dug Dugs with Lost in My World. I'm Jessica and I'm here with Leah. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great.
Good. We open with a song from a 1972 album from Mexico, because today we are talking about the critically acclaimed Alfonso Cuarón film Roma, which is on Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix and their scads of money.
Yeah, warehouse full of cash.
Yeah,
bought them this movie from acclaimed director Alfonso Cuarón, and it got a limited theatrical release I think just so it would be eligible for Oscar consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but here it is on Netflix. Yeah. A sweeping, contemplative, black and white art house film available to watch on your iPhone.
Yeah.
What did you think, Leah? Look so angry.
Life is a rich tapestry. I don't even know where to start. I'm familiar with Alfonso Cuarón, as I'm sure most people are. He is the director of Gravity, his most recent film, and he did Y Tu Mama Tambien, that was his first, which I didn't actually see, so I can't comment on that. But my husband and I, maybe a year ago, decided that we should watch Children of Men, also an Alfonso Cuarón movie.
Mm-hmm. Another lighthearted
romp. Yeah, just a little joyful romp through an apocalyptic world. and damn, Alfonso Cuarón really specializes in, like, existential crises, like prompting huge existential crises in me.
Oh yeah.
This movie, as you mentioned, is critically acclaimed. It's a front runner for all kinds of Oscar buzz, and I didn't get it. I totally did not get it. I thought it was fine.
It's okay.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was a big fucking bummer, as most of Alfonso Cuarón's movies.
Yeah,
are.
It was funny for me watching this because. This film was set against a backdrop of truly garbage Hallmark movies, which is the only other thing I've been watching right now. So it was a real shift in tone for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's make this the most solipsistic episode of TV on the radio ever. So I knew that it would not. I knew it was going to be different. Some of the garbage I read online about this film is this debate about whether you should see this movie, you should make the effort to see it in a theater or just, you know, watch it on Netflix. Like everyone's absolutely going to. And I hate that kind of thing. I do value the theater experience. But I really, like, the more someone tells me I should see something in the theater, the more I'm like, fuck you, I'm going to watch it on my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
On the bus. Yeah. With only one earbud in.
I'm
going to
watch this on my Generation 1 iPod.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it over someone else's shoulder who's watching it on their iPhone on a plane. But then after some back and forth, I really did come down on the side of, like, this. I would have enjoyed this movie more if I had seen it in the theater. Because I just, even if you kind of decide, like, I'm just gonna focus on this being at home now, I'm just like in this headspace of, like, my phone's next to me, my husband's talking, there's, you know, we're sort of like have a running commentary on whatever we're watching. It's just less immersive, and this film is so quiet and so not plot driven, not even like dialogue driven, like the things that we normally sort of hang on to watching TV just aren't there. This is about, you know, these gorgeous panoramic shots and like very art housey stuff.
Yeah.
And I think just being at home didn't really put me in the headspace to absorb this film in the way it was meant to be absorbed.
Yeah, this is very much a cinematic work of art. And as you mentioned, it's not really driven by anything. And I found that kind of boring. But I agree that maybe if I had been in a theater and directly focused on it and not looking at my phone and not nodding off for like brief scenes, that I would have been more immersed in it. My thinking when I saw it originally was like, I don't want this, like, I don't want to have to parse somebody's internal, like, narrative. I don't want to try to figure out the motivations of these characters. And I don't want to, I don't know, wonder about their life. Yeah. I feel like I told myself, I was like, oh, it's because, you know, the world is so shitty right now that I need, like, clear statements of,
right,
you know, unambiguous, like, people telling me. I don't want to try to parse things out. And then I was like, well, that's super shitty. Like, that's part of the problem with the world is, like, nobody's trying to understand anything.
Yeah.
And nobody has curiosity about anything. And so I was like, also, is my attention span really that short that I literally need to be fucking spoon-fed? Like, I need to have some character say, like, now she's sad because of the, you know, like, and it really did prompt this big existential crisis where I was like, am I just a piece of shit? Like, I know I should like this, and why don't I? And
yeah, it definitely, it takes more effort. And that's always been true of, like, you know, more arty, pieces of film. It's not story. There is a story, but it takes you kind of quieting your mind and committing to just letting this 2 hour and 15 minute film wash over you. And yeah, I think these days I'm so used to watching like 32 second YouTube videos or, you know, things that are more story driven and dialogue driven that I wish I had known what I was getting into more, because I would have maybe waited till I was in the mood to sort of watch something like this.
Well, I also feel never. That's the problem. I'm like, I sort of dreaded watching this, and I was kind of angrily live tweeting at you. I was like, so is this bullshit just 20 minutes of her fucking mopping? Is it just going to be water all over my cinema, all over the screen for the next 2 hours? Spoiler, yes.
kind of.
But I did actually soften my stance on this, which when I finished, I am not ashamed to... Well, no, I'm very ashamed to say that I sent you a message saying what a piece of shit. And I've since softened my stance. I think that the movie is beautiful. It's beautifully shot. It's pretty autobiographical.
It's about... It's, you know, it kind of follows the life that he had growing up, but it's focused on the maid who raised him.
Including a recreation of his house, which is crazy.
Yeah, that house was amazing.
It was beautiful. But
the reviews kept referring to the family as a middle class family. And I was like, is this middle class in Mexico City? Because I'm moving down there.
Yeah, totally. I think it's beautiful. My biggest thing was I didn't like it. Felt very cinematic and through a lens to me. Everybody's talking about how it's this like searingly intimate portrayal, and I felt like it was kind of removed from that. I felt like it was more truly an art piece. Like, I didn't feel a lot of emotion. I thought it was and then as I said, that prompted a whole existential crisis where I'm like, oh, because now I just need the equivalent of Hallmark movies with things being spoon-fed to me that I don't need to think about. Like,
it was also, I mean, in that context, I feel like I've been watching a lot of stuff that is very, very conventional, and you always know what's going to happen, or you're signaled by some sort of film or television convention that, like, oh, this is the part where they have a fight that's based on a misunderstanding or something. And this movie is just much more about sort of documenting these moments, and like words aren't spoken, and it's not really you don't really see the story until you sort of look back at what happened. Anyway, we're talking very abstractly about it. Was there anything striking to you about it? Or I was really like, speaking of parts that just I didn't get, there's this part where the family goes on this like vacation with a bunch of other families, and they're at this like big vacation country house. And there's a scene where the kids are all running around screaming in the forest, and the guns, the adults are just shooting guns. Like that. I think it did a really good job of creating like incredible tension, you know, because I really didn't, there was nothing for me to hold on to like be like, oh, I know what happens in this scene. So you see these kids running around joyously and adults shooting guns, and I was like, oh shit, something terrible is gonna happen.
There is a pervasive sense of like peril through all of Alfonso Cuarón's movies, and that man loves a fucking dead baby. That's all. It's sort of you were on edge the whole time. Like, there's also an extremely tense scene in the water, and
But you never know how it's going to turn out. Like, the vacation sequence, they wake up or they go out, they're having a holiday party, and the forest is on fire. And I'm like, oh man, everyone's going to die in this scene. And then they all sort of shamble out into the forest, like most people still holding their wine glasses, and start like tossing like drops of water on the fire. And then it's just like, yeah, well, that happened. The next day, it's all, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And that, but the other scenes do end in true, like, devastation, but it just did a really good job of, I really never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, it is this redemptive story about how Cleo, the, I was going to call her servant, but maid, is this, like, insanely, like, important part. It's this, it is an intimate portrayal of, like, mm-hmm. how having somebody in your life daily, like, helping you manage your life is just so, it's like your family, but not. And there were some really, the actress who played Cleo, I do not recall her name, but she is a non-actress and she was outstanding. I mean, it was a, an awesome performance. It was, like, very intimate, very moving. There is a scene where there's a lot of full frontal penis doing martial arts. So if that's personally triggering
you like
for you,
naked
as it was
karate,
for me,
this is the movie for you.
Just be aware. The most like shocking scene in the entire movie for me was a scene outside a movie theater where she's standing there and there's like hawkers all around selling their wares. And there was this tiny little dancing thing that didn't have any strings. And Alfonso Cuarón, if you're listening, can you please tell me how that happened? That was some real movie magic right there. I was like, I need to know what that is and how to get one.
That's amazing. That was an amazing scene too, because she, spoilers for this movie that is not plot driven. She's making out with her boyfriend at the movies and he ghosts her after she reveals that she's pregnant, and her like walking out into this cacophony of people selling stuff, and like you just see her like contemplating and it's just chaos around her. I thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah, and the movie truly is this like artistic, beautifully shot work that I don't understand again because I'm not in that world, I guess.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, there's lots of references to other very important films that I don't want to feel like I'm being tested.
I get that. I don't know that there's a ton to really. I mean, I'm sure there is stuff. There's probably stuff that sailed right over my dumb head. But yeah, I did click an article about what the two films that we saw in that. There are two scenes where they go to the movies. One of them, they went to see Marooned, which is a early 70s space travel film. And the other one is some, like, macaroni war film, I believe it was. Or no, it was a French war movie.
Okay.
And this article, like, it was like, what the two film references in Roma mean? And at the end of the article, I was like, you didn't tell me anything.
Yeah.
Like, it was the most bullshit article I've ever read.
Means that, like, they saw a movie.
Yeah, they tried to make some connection between the meanings of those two movies and what was going on here, and I didn't buy any of it. I think I clicked on a lot of clickbait. It's really the tail wagging the dog with content out there nowadays. Mm-hmm. There's so much meaningless crap.
Yeah. As I said, I mean, really the overall takeaway from it for me was like Reddit/AITA. Am I the asshole for not liking this movie that everyone's so rapturous about? So if you have thoughts on that, please feel free to tweet at us.
That would be wonderful.
I would love it if you could tell me, am I the asshole? Specifically just about this movie, not about anything else. We're at BFF TV on the radio, and we would love to hear from you.
Yeah, guys, please put on your berets and join our film chat.
Yes.
We're film critics now. This is our film podcast.
I thought you were going to say join our paramilitary organization.
That'd be great, too.
Yeah.
Don't talk about that on the radio, though. We'll sidebar about that. I also felt like this movie takes you sort of getting to the end and reflecting on to really appreciate, because in retrospect, I appreciate how the political backdrop was very slowly revealed. And for half the movie, I was like, there's something going on here that I'm not getting and it's making me angry.
Mm-hmm.
But then once it sort of explodes into violence, I wasn't familiar with that particular historical incident, Corpus Christi massacre.
Mm-hmm.
But you sort of get it once you're there. And it's like, oh, I see how it was sort of slowly just hinting at this actual historical backdrop to the non-story. And then also just her relationship to the family, I mm-hmm. thought was very well revealed slowly. You know, you're not sure. At the beginning, there's not much indication that she's truly like...
happy you're connected. Or,
yeah. Or how close she is to the family. And then slowly you see that she, like the kids... The first interaction you see with the kid, with the kids, is the youngest one asking her, why are you talking that way? Because mm-hmm. she's speaking in her native indigenous tongue. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mixtec to the other house servant. And that, like, that felt, you know, bad. Like, oh, she's, you know, it felt racist mm-hmm. and like, oh, maybe she's this... not, I don't know, like, it's going to be a story about her. Very eloquent this morning. You know, it sort of set the tone to mm-hmm. be like, maybe there's going to be an upsetting interaction or she's not treated well. But then you see, like, she's picking up dishes out while the family's watching television and the little kid puts his arm around her and mm-hmm. they have actually a very close, like,
yeah,
she's a very maternal relationship with all the kids. And
Then also you see the power struggle between her and the mother. Like, when she does sit down and she's with the kids, the mother, like, makes up
right.
a task for her to
exactly,
do and
yeah.
things like that. And, yeah.
Yeah. And that also set a tone for the mm-hmm. their relationship, the two women. But then you see them grow closer mm-hmm. once the father of the family disappears with his...
peace.
Yeah. young mm-hmm. girlfriend. Yeah, I thought that was very
He went to Canada.
I know. yeah.
Which must be what they say in Mexico. Oh, my dad's in Canada
yeah.
with his family.
Yalitza Aparicio is the woman who played Cleo.
Yeah.
I read an interview with her, and she talked about how a lot of the during the filming, they didn't even know until maybe a day before or the day of shooting what was actually going to happen mm-hmm. in the scene. And this, I cried all over again reading this. She didn't know how the birth scene was going to turn out. Like, it was a revelation to
oh,
her
really?
As she was acting it that the baby didn't survive. And that, so her reaction was like learning that in real time. And that was devastating to read.
Alfonso Cuarón's fucked up.
I know. It's like, you read about so many directors who have like what sounds like a borderline abusive relationship.
Yeah.
But I mean... yeah, I don't know. I mean, what does it take to get emotion out of people? Probably emotional abuse, you know?
That's the thing. I didn't feel emotion. Like, I feel like upon reflection during this movie, after this movie, I've softened in my stance to it, but it's not something I would willingly go back and watch again. And I feel like, yeah, there's a real sense of menace throughout this movie mm-hmm. and throughout all of his work. And that comes from somewhere dark.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You heard it here first, guys. Alfonso Cuarón. I don't know.
Get help.
Yeah. but, you know, good on you for your art, I guess. I don't know.
There's also a lot of a natural disaster in the film. Mm-hmm. There's the forest fire. There's an earthquake which... Mm-hmm. terrified me as a San Franciscan who mm-hmm. lives in terror of the next earthquake.
Did another baby die during that? Is that what we were...
I wasn't sure the implication there. I think that was just supposed to feel very like perilous, but mm-hmm. you know, part of the ceiling plaster falls down on the ward of newborns
in the incubator. Yeah,
I mean, I think the baby was fine. It was in an incubator. Thank God for plexiglass. And I guess hail is not a natural disaster, but there was tons of water imagery.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask you, because you're good at symbolism.
Yes, I fell asleep during like a lot of the movie. No, I fell asleep for about 15 minutes at the beginning. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously there's clear parallels between the rescue at sea and like a baptism. Like it's very, like it breaks down the whole family. Like they're all the... scene from the movie that is most commonly seen is everybody huddled on the beach.
Yeah.
And that is the first time that Cleo shows any emotion, really. And the mm-hmm. mother is like, we all love you so much. And it's like this baptism and like this new, you know, them,
a rebirth.
Yeah. Like a rebirth of them as the family unit. Mm-hmm. Now that the dad's totally out of the picture. And that's, I believe it's after that scene that the mom finally tells the kids. Or was it
before?
It was
before. I think that was the last scene.
But yeah, I don't know what the like water imagery at the
front. I think Rebirth and is good. That's a good one. Let's go with that.
I don't know. I also have grave concerns about Boros the dog and his digestive system, because that is, there is a lot of shit in this movie that is generated by one poor dog.
That was another neglected,
amazingly adorable dog.
Yeah, that's another thing that made me very on edge, was the dog like jumping around. That's repeatedly in the film, the dog's bouncing around in the driveway, trying to run away.
Yeah.
You know, going crazy in the driveway where people are barreling into the house drunk in their Galaxy 500. I was sure that Boros was going to die.
Well,
but spoilers, you guys, if you're like me and will never watch a film if you know the dog's going to die, Boros is fine.
Yeah. Well, what was the, what was all the dog imagery about? Like,
oh my
they
God,
go
yeah.
to that weird house, that Eyes Wide Shut party that they go to, had every dog who had lived at that place mounted, like, who had died.
Yeah.
They all the heads were mounted on plaques.
Oh, it was, like, the single weirdest thing I've ever seen.
And then, yeah, and then the dogs that were currently alive at that house were, like, they made multiple references to them being exhausted because the kids were...
Oh, yeah.
Kids were constantly at them and things, and I was like, is this all like the death of loyalty? Like, what?
Yeah.
I don't like all men are dogs. Like, I,
yeah, I
there was,
know.
I feel like there was a lot that there's I probably missed, there, yeah. But that took a real Wes Anderson turn. I thought, I was like, this is wow,
dogs, yeah,
it just, yeah, it's, I was like, I don't get what the dog imagery is, but I'm glad Boros was okay.
Yeah, thank God for Boros. He'll live to have his head mounted on the wall.
Well, he doesn't live in that house, so he won't be mounted on the wall. He'll probably thank just God. Be neglected for the rest of his life, living in that little alley.
This is a minorly fun fact. On the Wikipedia page about this film, none of the actors have links to their own Wikipedia page.
Okay.
I don't know if that's just because there aren't.
It's probably because Alfonso Cuarón won't allow it.
Yeah. Maybe Wikipedia doesn't adequately cover English language. Anyway, other Mexican actors. Yalitza Aparicio now has one. She didn't yesterday. The only person who does have a link is the guy who played Professor Zovek, the guy who was doing the karate training in the in the desert.
Yeah, yeah.
That I thought was just an innocent karate class, but it turns out those were the halcones that were being trained to suppress student protest, being trained by the Mexican government and the CIA. But the guy who played Professor Zovek is Latin Lover. That's his name. He's a Mexican actor and wrestler.
Oh!
A.K.A. Victor Manuel Resendiz Ruiz.
Delightful.
But I thought that was funny, just looking down the list of actors, and the only one with a link was Latin Lover.
Latin
Lover. I sort of saw that name flash in the credits, and it registered briefly. Oh, someone in this movie is named Latin Lover. All right, well, I do recommend this movie, but with the caveat that you should, if your brain's as rotted as mine, go in with the expectation that this is a quiet art film that you won't benefit from watching while also looking at your phone and shopping on Amazon and talking to people.
This truly is one of those, like, makes you think movies.
But I thought it was beautiful. I definitely recommend it.
I do think it was beautifully shot and fine. I'm glad I saw it. I never need to see it again. Alfonso Cuarón, please stop making sad movies.
Try a rom-com next.
Yeah.
Alfonso. I mean, you could do a great one. Okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to switch gears a little bit. But I'm sure we'll find some common ground between Roma and Netflix's other future award contender, Dumplin'. But yeah, we're going to do a little song, and then when we come back, we'll chat more. Please stay tuned to BFF.FM.
Popcorn soda, box of Raisinets, velvet cushioned seats and soft armrests. Best seat in my favorite movie house. My dreaming as the lights go out. Up on the silver screen, I picture me living out. Wish I had a nickel for each dime I've spent. Watching others live their lives with confidence. Here's a preview of some things to come. It's not too late for me to be someone.
Welcome back to BFF.FM. That was, I believe, an original song by Dolly Parton from the Dumplin' soundtrack. Leah, mm-hmm. Did you watch Dumplin'?
I sure did. I actually watched it directly.
I'm sorry, did a little accent just pop in there?
No, not intentionally. I watched it directly after watching Roma.
Oh, really?
Because I needed a little palate cleanser before I went to bed in a rage-fueled haze.
Uh-huh. What'd you think?
I had read searingly bad reviews about this
really?
Movie, and I don't think it merits the like
disdain.
Yeah, I don't think it was perfectly fine.
I enjoyed it,
and
I've been only, I mean, I haven't read that many reviews, but it seems to be doing it seems to be on the black review wise.
Okay.
People seem to like it. I thought it was delightful. What's her name? Danielle McDonald?
Yes.
I love her.
Yeah, I have not seen. She was in
Patty Cakes. She's only in films that have confections in the title.
Yeah.
Patty Cakes is great. You should watch it.
Okay.
That's a true delight. But yeah, she's the star of Dumplin' alongside Jennifer Aniston, mm-hmm. who is a former beauty queen who's mm-hmm. now a pageant director. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Her daughter is a plus size.
Yes.
And I think what's refreshing about this film is it's not like a transformation story. Mm-hmm. She's not interested in changing herself. Mm-hmm. It's about changing the way we define beauty.
It's also about getting out of your own way.
Yes.
Very much.
Yes.
Which I felt is kind of something that it had in common with Roma, is that there's like sort of changing your perspective about things mm-hmm. often changes your circumstances. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Mom needed to get out of her own way a little bit in Roma. As did Dumplin' in this movie.
Well, she did. She decided to leave biochemistry and go
publishing.
Yeah, go into publishing, which is a thing you can do.
That's just
go
sure.
into a different field than the one you're trained for. I've had great success with that. But so she, our main character, Willow Dean, mm-hmm. great name, decides to join the local beauty contest as a protest.
Yes.
And some friends of hers join, including, I forget the actor's name, Bex, like,
who played
Parker
the
Bowles or something. Or no, the other one who was Bullet in The Killing.
Oh.
Another little young androgyne. She's delightful. I love her.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I don't know any. I'm sorry. I don't know any of the actors' names except Jennifer Aniston.
Odea Rush plays her best friend, Ellen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they all join. And yeah. It turns out, like, yeah, she joined to sort of like disrupt the whole thing
mm-hmm.
and then learn to find herself beautiful in the process
yeah.
with the help of Dolly Parton as inspiration and some drag queens.
Yeah, sure. Which wouldn't all of our teen lives be better if we focused more on both Dolly Parton and drag queens?
Can you imagine how your life would be better if like a drag queen had taken you under her wing when you were an impressionable
teen? Oh, well,
teen?
Jess, I feel like that did happen. I mean, Patrick Swayze and To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. I
wonder
frequently
if that movie holds
to
up.
Myself, today is a Say Something Hat Day. Like, that is my watchword, Jess. You know that.
Oh, my
that.
God, that's beautiful.
yeah, Harold Perrineau, who I know from Lost.
Oh, okay.
So I have a different experience with him than you do.
I
did not remember that he was a menacing character in Sons of
Anarchy. I didn't pick him out, but Steven recognized him from something, and so Googling him, that's definitely the role I would have I remember him from. Mm-hmm. He was something Pope.
Damon Pope.
Who was terrifying in Sons of Anarchy. I mean, he can play the most menacing character in Sons of Anarchy and a warm-hearted, nurturing drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the greatest actor of our generation.
Yes, clearly. Clearly.
Yeah, he was great. And also starring someone named Sam Pancake, speaking of confections
yes.
and people with awesome names like Latin Lover. I've never seen Sam Pancake before, but I Googled him because his name is Sam Pancake.
Has been kicking around for years.
He's got hundreds
Friends.
Of TV credits.
He's been in Friends.
Who was he in Friends?
He's just, you know, not one of
Some
the
guy.
Friends.
Yeah. Just, oh, really? Not. Oh, what? Yeah. He wasn't Chandler? Thank you so much.
Yeah, Sam Pancake, good friend of my close personal friend, Busy Phillips.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Sam Pancake, underutilized. I mean, I felt like his line delivery was a little off in this.
He Neil actually Bartolos sort of rang as up. Like, I thought, this guy's not an actor, but it turns out he is an actor.
But yeah, it did ring as not an actor. I thought this movie was really cute. I thought it joins the genre of, it's a young adult book that was made into a movie by mm-hmm. Netflix. Again, just handing bags of money to whoever happens past the building,
yeah.
I guess. but it did the same thing that some of those movies, like To All the Boys I've Loved Before, and then there was another forgettable one.
Sierra Burgess.
Sierra Burgess is a loser. It does the same thing where it's got a love interest,
mm-hmm.
but that's like the D plot. And yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm here for that. Like, right. I want that not to be the only thing that the girl in any of these shows is focusing on.
Yeah, that's what it was refreshing because none of it is about her trying to, like, win the boy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just interested in her, mm-hmm. and it's about her recognizing herself as someone desirable. Mm-hmm. That guy just, like, stood around and was cute for the two scenes he was in, and that's all we got. Otherwise, it was, like, a very female-focused
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, which was awesome. I love yeah. that. And, yeah, sure, give me a cute little guy who's unabashedly telling you that he likes you and is kind-hearted and goes to, like, a prep school and has a weird oral fixation and is very hirsute.
That guy. Was it you? I feel like I mentioned to you maybe last night that guy really, they needed to do something about his arm hair to make him play a high school movie. But who am I to body shame, especially in a movie about loving yourself for who you are. I take it back. His hairy arms were great. I love a manly high school student.
Yeah. That guy is from Franklin, Tennessee, where
really?
My husband's family is from. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll look him up next time I'm home.
Oh, you definitely should.
And he's big in, like, the Christian music scene, apparently.
Is he a musician?
He is a Christian musician, yes.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well, in that vein, I feel like this movie was also about transcending what we have come to call identity politics to mm-hmm. form a coalition to fight the patriarchy.
Sure.
Because
is Christian music supposed to be doing that?
Well, I don't know. If he's in this movie, well, let's consider him an ally until we find out otherwise.
Until he gets milkshaked up.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, let's do it.
But, you know, there wasn't one, but three fat stars in this mm-hmm. movie, if you count Aunt Lucy, who is sort of only seen in flashback. We had drag queens. Mm-hmm. We had a skinny, beautiful best friend. Mm-hmm. We had someone who was non-binary or, you know.
Yeah. Gender fluid.
Gender fluid. Yeah. And everyone came together to fight the patriarchy.
Yeah.
To fight the patriarchal standards of women's beauty and, you know, learn that we can all love ourselves.
Doing it one small pageant at a time.
Yeah.
Forging stronger bonds with your mom. Jennifer Aniston was great in this. She was very effective as, you know, America loves to see Jennifer Aniston suffer. And she plays that so well, like that role of this, like she's kind of the town celebrity because she's mm-hmm. the pageant director and she won back in whenever. And she's this like shallow, very Texas, small town Texas
yeah.
type. And she played it really well, but there's like a real brittleness to her mm-hmm. too. That was, and there was like a pretty emotional scene at the end between her and Willa Dean. That I thought was really, she was really effective. I think she's, she was
I also thought that role was really well done. There was a little bit more nuance. Mm-hmm. Like she wasn't just the cold, like mom who only cared about her daughter's beauty. They showed her more as like very passionate about what she does.
Yeah.
She loved directing beauty pageants. She loved all the girls and felt like she wanted everyone to win.
Yeah.
And it was a nice change from just like sort of the emotionally abusive mom who hates her daughter because she's fat.
It
was like, I thought that was really well done. Do you remember your first drag experience?
Oh, I was going to say.
Was it Tu Wong
My
Fu?
First pageant?
Yeah.
it was probably Tu Wong Fu.
I think, now I wouldn't have remembered that, but I think that was for me too, my first.
Oh, God, that movie's so good.
Not seen it since it was in the theater.
It's delightful.
Really?
It is a true delight. I've seen that movie maybe 10 times, and it holds up. It's great.
Man, Patrick Swayze really was like mm-hmm. the greatest actor of his generation.
Yeah. What a loss.
So magnetic. Like, and he knew it too. He's like, I could pull off drag queen.
Yeah.
People will. Yeah.
Yeah. Wesley Snipes.
Oh, God. I forgot about that. All right. I'm going to revisit that. Maybe that will be my Sunday afternoon activity.
I recommend it.
Let's see. What else do I got here? Leah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How would you define loyalty?
Oh, God.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
What would you perform for the talent portion of our show today?
Oh, definitely a vagina monologue. For sure. For for sure. I mean, if you're fighting the patriarchy, that's absolutely, I would even slur the shit out of it. Like, yeah. Probably the one where they say the C word a lot. Yeah, you mentioned that you love the training montage scene.
Oh, God, so good.
And it was great. I also love the scene where they're going through and flashing on clips of each girl's talent, and it was just delightful. And Jennifer Aniston had to approve everyone.
Yeah,
you see them do like nothing basically, right. And she's like, approved.
Yeah,
approved. You know, and like it's just, yeah, it's like the Friday Night Lights of beauty pageants.
Yeah,
basically, you saw like how that is central to that town's identity and very central to her identity.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I also like that. It was very upfront about like a lot of the stuff that Willa Dean was trying to subvert was just her, like,
yeah,
a lot of it. Yes, she was being bullied at school, and yes, like her mom did run this beauty pageant and whatever, but yeah, like that wasn't what her mom thought about. She didn't focus on like her fat daughter and want to change her, and
right.
A lot of it was her getting out of her own way and like being open to right. trying new things and all that.
One thing I did read about this mentioned how, you know, a lot of body positivity that we see is actually brands just sort of capitalizing on this idea that's now in the public discourse. And this movie, it sort of becomes up to Willow Dean and her band of misfit friends to, like, take it upon themselves to fight this whole idea of what this narrowly defined idea of female beauty and like show everyone, you know, they have to go on this journey to show everyone that different kinds of bodies can be beautiful and to love themselves the way they should. And it's sort of like it puts the onus on people who are defined out of beauty to fight it instead of examining the like forces behind what has shaped the standards of female beauty. Yeah, so I'm just taking someone else's point and putting it out there. I thought that was interesting. It's not really about the work is all on them, you know, instead of other people to reexamine what makes us beautiful or what we decide is beautiful.
Yeah, but isn't that true for everyone?
Yeah.
That the work is all on you to, I mean, I think that was kind of one of the things that the movie did a good job with conveying, is that like it is about getting out of your own way a little bit too, and like accepting that, like, yeah, fully accepting. There's a kind of like deep speech between her and her friend where she is like, you know, you this is her best friend Ellen, played by Odea Rush. And she said, you know, you need to like stop trying so hard. Like, you're the type of girl who could just like win this without trying. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's, they have this falling out about it where she's just like, you know, you can't judge people for things they can't change also,
yeah.
You know, and like that led to the whole definition of loyalty and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was really cute. I teared up a few times.
Oh, I did too.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? Oh. Everything's fine, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely teared up. The part where, I won't give it away, but yeah, I highly recommend this movie. I thought it was delightful.
Yeah. It also, like, I read a review that said it didn't have any real depth, and I sort of disagree with that.
I
thought that it had some nuance and depth. It's... there's like a real undercurrent. They're dealing with the loss of her Aunt Lucy, who had been like sort of her rock and like her idol. And they had the Dolly Parton parties together and all of that. And like she refers to her as like the person who raised her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who she felt closest to. And so, yeah, they're like dealing with, there's like tangible grief throughout the movie that was dealt with in what I felt was like a really realistic way. There's not a neat tie up about like, oh, we all learned a lesson and move forward, you know? And I thought that the aunt's role was used effectively, and yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, since we're talking about Oscar-worthy films.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. And future Oscar snubs. Mm-hmm. Dumplin'. So Netflix has Emmys, obviously.
Yes.
They have Grammys. They've, like, I think Stranger Things, some original composition for that, won
really?
A Grammy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They are clearly angling for an Oscar with Roma.
Oh, yes.
What do you think Netflix would have to do to get a Tony?
Oh, God.
slash EGOT status.
I don't know, but I'm sure there's fevered meetings happening at Netflix about that.
I was thinking Queer Eye Musical, naturally.
Yeah.
Or they could co-produce Wild Wild Country, the musical.
Oh, which, yes. Which
would have good music
yeah.
and great costumes.
Yeah. Wild Wild Country, the musical, is definitely, that would be a better contender than Making a Murderer, which is what I was thinking of.
Ooh.
The musical. Making a Murderer, the musical.
Oh, boy. No, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I could come up with a good song about Brendan Dassey.
Yeah.
Home in time for WrestleMania, it'd be the break. Oh. And then reprise throughout.
This is a really good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Get out of Netflix. We can make your Tony dreams
come
through.
Your EGOT dreams. Yeah.
I this week saw Dear Evan Hansen and the two 33-year-old wunderkinds who wrote that. We can do that, Jess. We could do it. Yeah. We could do it less emotionally manipulative than Evan Hansen was, actually. So.
Yeah. I think people like emotional manipulation nowadays. Like, just to know
that
you still have emotions.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know who I am anymore. That's my thing. Yeah. Like, Alfonso Cuarón can't do it for me, but Dumplin' can.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I need somebody to directly put the words and thoughts directly into my head mm-hmm. so I do not have to think about it at all. Like,
yeah,
it's sad. It.
In other Oscar news, as we all have heard so much about, yes. Kevin Hart out as yeah. host.
Mm-hmm.
Good riddance, I say.
Yeah.
So they haven't announced a new host yet, right?
No, they have not.
Okay, so
they're
what
talking
are your ideas?
About doing it without a host this year.
Oh, interesting. That's lame. Get a host.
Get a
we
host.
Need a hero or villain.
Get a team of hosts. I mean, Kevin Hart has clearly filled a villain role,
right?
But
America needs someone to criticize as Oscar host.
Sure,
don't take that
sure.
away from us.
Sure.
Oscars.
What about Matt Damon?
I feel like a white man, it's not the right choice right now. But, I mean, Matt Damon, I think he'd be good.
But isn't Hollywood tone deaf enough to do that?
Totally, yeah. I mean, yeah. It could be much worse than that. Well, he is a white man, but I was thinking Jason Mantzoukas.
Oh. Is Jason Mantzoukas white?
Is Greek white? Yeah, he's
technically he's Greek.
White.
That's right. Sure, Jason Mantzoukas.
Or my eternal idea for everything, Nicole fucking Byer.
Nicole Byer would be outstanding. She would be great.
Yeah.
And she deserves it and should do it. Yeah, she'd be awesome. I don't know. The Rock, I mean.
That would be great.
The Rock is universally beloved, has not yet been milkshake ducked. I'm a little worried something is going to come out. But he's versatile. He's obviously
charming,
like the busiest man on the planet, but could totally find time to host the Oscars and would pull it off.
Yeah, I think
I would like to see The Rock bench press like Emily Blunt or something. Like, sure, I can. Oscars, get at us. Netflix and Oscars, get at us. We got it, guys. We'll whip up a show for you in no time. Actually, why don't you just have The Rock and Busy Phillips co-host?
Oh my God, that would be a magical combination.
Done and done.
Busy Phillips would be a great idea.
She would. She has been
she
lobbying
has so many
herself.
Friends.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
She has been lobbying hard for the Oscars.
She has an iconic picture of herself at the Oscars reacting to the
and,
Moonlight dust-up.
And outstanding oral history accompaniment.
Yeah. Which,
Yeah, I think the Oscars should be The Rock.
Oh,
and
or
Busy
Warren
Phillips.
Beatty and
Faye Dunaway.
Oh my God.
Standing facing the back of the theater instead of the crowd. It'd be great. Yeah, just play up the doddering old people.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh God, that's the winning idea, I think.
I don't know. I still think Busy Phillips saying, "Hey guys, it's the Oscars," is up there.
Sipping a margarita out of a tiny straw the whole time.
Yes, while doing leg foot and picking her face. She's amazing.
Are you enjoying her show? Are you watching it?
Recorded it and I have not yet watched it. And also I applied for tickets and they've reached out to me twice now and I have not been able to go either time, but I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful my day will come. Steven says Lin-Manuel is the best.
That's a good idea.
The best he has heard.
America's sweetheart.
And sure. Lin-Manuel, the most enthusiastic man on the planet, would be good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we gave you tons of ideas, so I expect credit when
I was gonna say I assume our checks in the mail.
Yeah.
Oscars.
All right, anything else?
No, we are prepping for our best of show.
Yeah, our top five of the year.
Yeah,
and our holiday extravaganza.
Yes.
We will be back next week with some kind of holiday extravaganza.
And speaking of the holidays and giving, as you may know, BFF has a pledge drive going on right now. I'll turn it over to my co-host, Jess, to tell you more about that.
Working together, we're building something truly special, a community radio station that brings diverse, authentic voices and sounds to the web waves, creates a more engaged San Francisco, and unites local and underground artists with music lovers in the magical way that only radio can. Mm-hmm. Join us by becoming a bestie or by making a one-time donation before December 31st. You can donate now at bff.fm/donate. We would love it if you guys would support our little community radio station that can here. It's brought us a lot of joy. We hope we bring you some amount of joy.
And even if we don't, there's 500 hours of individual, amazing, like independent programming that happens. And if you become a bestie, it gets you access to our Bestie Bash.
Mm-hmm.
One happened last night. It has amazing live music. Snacks, bands, all kinds of cool stuff. And if you haven't been to the Secret Alley, it's a real treat.
Yeah, it's that worth it, worth the price of entry just to come to a party at the Secret Alley. It's a truly magical space.
It really is. And BFF is magical and deserves your support. Also, it is tax deductible, guys. So
this is the nonprofit. None of your donations go to our champagne fund. And that's our promise here at TV on the Radio.
Champagne fund is run dry.
Yeah. it ran out in February, weirdly. But we're hoping to pop some more in 2019. So yeah, keep us on the air in 2019, guys. We would really appreciate it. We're going to close with another Dolly song. Thanks for listening.
Dolly does make everything more joyful. And
her voice, I can't believe it. Her voice is one of the few that just makes me emotional.
Yeah,
just hearing it.
Yeah, she's national treasure.
Yeah,
well deserved.
All right. Well, thanks you guys for listening. Stay tuned for Indie Rock Girl Radio. She's here right now, and we will talk to you next week.